Welcome to Sounds from the Sanctuary, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, David Ball.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to Sounds from the Sanctuary. Today I am so happy to have our first real in-studio guest, unmasked, after COVID, post-COVID. I am here with Norberto Guinaldo, who is a local composer with a very international history. Norberto, please say hi to everyone and tell us where you work. I know you're local here, so introduce yourself to all our listeners out there.
Oh, hello everybody. My name is Norberto Guinaldo. I'm the organist at the United Methodist Church in Garden Grove. I've been there for 55 years.
55 years. You've seen Orange County longer than I have, longer than I've been alive.
Yes, I've been there 55 years and I have enjoyed every minute of it. You know, I moved from Argentina in 1959 and I got several jobs in Southern California until they put the organ and they built a new church in Garden Grove and put a new organ in 1966. I was there since 1965. And so I've been there all this time.
Wow, that's incredible. And you're a composer too. Like that's one of your, it seems like you're an organist, you're a musician, but composing seems to be something you do a lot of.
Yeah, well, I always wanted to be an organist, not a composer, but I suppose that came gradually. I remember when I was a little kid, I went to see a movie called A Song to Remember, the life of Frédéric Chopin. And when I went home, I sat on the piano and wanted to compose.
That's Chopin. I was going to say, that's great. So you were inspired by Chopin. So not that we're going to tie that into your musical style,
well,
but, you know.
That was when I was probably 8 years old or 10. I don't remember exactly, no. But, no, the composing came, you know, after I was about 16, 17 years old, 18 years old. And it was a rough time learning how to compose, you know. I just wanted to play the organ, not right, but it just happened, and I stuck with it, and I improved a little bit year after year, and until what I have written are the results.
Now you have this great body of work here, which is incredible. You've written things for me. You've written things for some really famous organists. So let's kick this off, and let's dive right into some of your works here. First, we're going to hear People Like Yeast. Anything you want to say about this piece besides that it's based on a Christmas tune we all know and love?
You know, I think it turned out very well, and I wrote for a very small organ, an organ that I had in my home. It's an old American organ that I had for about 35 years, and then I sold to a Lutheran church in New York, and I wrote that piece and several others for that particular organ that was restored and still is in New Paltz, New York. And just that happened to choose that tune, and I think that the piece turned out very nice.
And of course, if you love this music, you can check it all out at, what's your website again?
It's guinaldopublications.com.
Great, you can buy all this stuff, and again, this is a piece that anyone can play for any organ of any size, so let's hear, I'm here with Norberto Guinaldo atop the Tower of Hope in the studios, here's People Look East. All right. Well, welcome back to Sounds from the Sanctuary. This is David Ball, your host. I am the Christ Cathedral organist and the acting head of music ministry here. And in the studio today, I am honored to have composer, organist, musician, church musician, local Orange County. He's at a church just up the street from us here in Garden Grove, Norberto Guinaldo. Norberto, thanks for being with us again.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
So, I sort of knew your name because around the country you're known as an organist and a composer. I recognize your name from the Diapason and from major organ publications, and obviously your music. Well, I love new music, so I try to be familiar with all the living composers that I can be. And that's something I'm going to say to all our listeners, is that if you're an organist, if you're a performing musician, it is your job to keep music alive. You need to meet living composers and have them write for you and have them write for your instrument. That really is important. I mean, I think that's important. You
I think so. It's important. Yes, indeed. You're true.
Like, that's how you keep the art alive. That's how you keep organ relevant to today, is you have somebody who's alive today writing the music of today.
Yeah, but it is a problem because we are used to the traditional sounds, and to develop a taste for contemporary music, it takes time and takes the desire to do it, even for professional organists.
Of course. Well, and I would add to that, too, that it takes, for a listener, it takes being open. I think Virgil Fox used to say something in his performances like, if you come across, I'll come across. Like, listening to something, you have to be open to what you're going to hear.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, so many people these days are so, I mean, again, I love the canon. I love the repertoire. I absolutely love it. You know, you can't take that away. But that's great to hear music of all these dead people from hundreds of years ago. But to hear something by someone who's alive today, you know, Norberto Guinaldo is a Christian man. And that's, you can see that in his music. He's based on, a lot of these things are based on Christian themes and on Catholic tunes, even some of these, some of the ancient chants of the church. But, and this all, let's go into the life of Norberto Guinaldo. So, first of all, you're from South America.
Yes, I was born in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and I started taking piano lessons when I was about 7 years old, and I owe that to my mother because I didn't want to have to play the piano. I wasn't interested in music, but there was an interesting thing. My mother was a seamstress, a very high-class seamstress, and my home was always full of women trying to cut patterns and make dresses and things like that. And there was a girl that lived around the corner that played the piano. And this girl wanted to learn how to make dresses for herself. And my mother said, okay, I could teach you how to make dresses if you teach my son to play the piano.
Wow.
And that's the way I started when I was 7 o'clock. And she taught me for about 5 years. And she was very good. And they had a German piano in her home, which nobody around me, we didn't own a piano. We didn't own a piano for about 5 years.
So
I went to her house every single year except Sundays and practiced there for an hour. That's how I started with music. And I enjoyed it. I remember the first time they sat me at the piano. I was very excited about it. And so the organ came when I was about 16. And there was another story behind that.
Wait, really? Okay, so you played piano, and was the organ, did you find that in church, or did you find that in, how does that come about? For pianists move to the organ, people think they're all the same instrument, and it's like, no, these are very different instruments here.
I had never heard the pipe organ in my whole life, never, until about 1962, I think, and I'm going to tell you how it happened. I used to play the pump organ in a little church, and I was used to the organ technique of playing the legato. I don't know, somehow I learned how to do it, but I didn't know what a pipe organ was.
Well, I was going to say, for our listeners, pump organs, you mean you pump with your feet, right?
Yeah, you pump with
I've played
your
feet. A couple of these things. They're sort of like, it's actually very difficult. It takes a lot of coordination because you're controlling the air that moves through the pipe. So if your feet stop pumping, the sound goes,
Exactly. So I played those since I was a little kid. And somehow I started interested in the music of Johann Sebastian Bach and the piano. But when I was in the fourth years of high school, I think it was 1962, that was the year when Eva Perón died in Argentina.
Mm.
So just like the Russians do in Russia when somebody of renown dies, all the radio stations changed their programs, and they play classical music for months.
Wow.
And this is what happened when Eva Perón died. So there was nothing to listen but classical music in the radio stations. So the national radio station started playing organ music. the organs, the preludes and fugues of Bach, and the French organs of Dupré and Frank and everything. And I said, what is this? This is fantastic. I want to know all about what an organ. And then I started going in downtown Buenos Aires and going into every Catholic church and look in the back and see if they have an organ. And they're wonderful churches in Buenos Aires and wonderful organs too. So I really took an interest in that. And I said, I have to find a teacher. I have to find a way of learning how to play the organ, and I have to find an organ to play.
Wow. So you just like walked around just looking for an organ. That's incredible. So how did you find a teacher then? Did you just go up into the choir loft and be like, hello, hola?
Yeah.
After mass or something? Like what?
That was another story. And the next town to mine, there was a church, old church from the 1800s and so. And I went going there one time. I look in the back and I see a little pipe organ. A tiny little pipe organ. And by that time, I was in 1953, on my last year of high school. And I went and asked the priest permission to play the organ. I went there trembling because the Catholic Church, to me, was a very strange place. And because of the kind of indoctrination that I have had when I was a youngster. But the priest, I was so surprised, says, sure, you come and come and practice the organ anytime you want.
Hey, there we go. See, the Catholic Church is welcoming. There we go.
So it was a one manual with pedals.
Wow. Okay. So very, very small
but,
instrument.
But it had everything. It had a principal and it had a little flute, like a gedack that I loved the sound of it. It had 8-4-2 and a mixture. No reeds, but that was terrific. For me, that was a sound that it was just heavenly, you know. And I started practicing there after school.
Wow.
And would go there every time. But finding a teacher was another story.
I was going to say, so many people have that experience where they walk into a church and they just start playing. I mean, of course, sorry, not to make the show half about Virgil Fox, but I remember if you read The Dish, Virgil talks about walking into a church and he thinks he was this organist reincarnate. I must have been here before because I knew how to play. It sounds like you had some similar experience though. That's, you know, you walk in and just you're inspired. But I think the takeaway I have from these kind of stories is that the organ is an inspiring instrument. It's this giant sound. Even small pipe organs have this special sort of overwhelming sound, and especially the spaces they're in. Like you talk about walking these Catholic churches and sort of being overwhelmed and just wow. I mean, I remember that too. I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, which is affectionately called the Rome of the West, and there were churches all over town, and I would do the same thing. You walk into a church and first you go, wow, this place is huge. Wow, this is amazing. Wow, the tabernacle. Wow. And then I would always turn around and go, ooh, what's in the choir loft? Ooh, what's in the choir loft? Can I play that?
Yeah.
You know, and when I was younger, before I started lessons, I'd always look back and go, could I ever play that? Because these things are, you know, they're high up in the lofts and they seem so, you know, and organists themselves, I think, can be very kind of choir loft musicians. It's like, this is one of the reasons we need to get out there. And it's important for people to hear stories like yours. People need to be interested in the organ. Average people, you know, there might be a kid out there somewhere. I'm proud of my organ students. You never know what pianists might be interested in playing the organ. And it's important that we share our choir lofts with these youngsters and to get people excited about the organ. Let's get into one of your pieces now. I think this next piece is going to be called In Praise of Saint Joseph, which I think is a great choice as the Pope has declared this year the year of Saint Joseph. So what a perfect piece to play on the radio. Tell us about this piece. And again, you can find this on his website for sale if you like the sheet music.
Well, I was interested in Gregorian chant, although I wasn't a Catholic but chant attracted me for some reason. And I was imitating other composers at one time. That's what you learn when you learn to write.
Well, of course, please.
You look at everybody.
Well, you see Bach, all those stories of him copying Vivaldi note for note just to learn the style.
Exactly. Also, I needed another different piece of Christmas music. So I took the chant for the Mass of St. Joseph and used that. And also at the same time, I used three Spanish carols on it. And also, Joseph, dearest Joseph mine, also
oh, wonderful.
Is there. So I put them together and I wrote this piece of music that it turned out very nicely because there is a lot of contrast of sounds. And I put the Spanish carols with the Gregorian chant and with the German tune at the same time. So it turned out very well. Why I did that, don't ask me, because I really don't know.
Well, you were inspired. Why not? You're a composer. You don't have to have a reason. You wrote it. So I think that encapsulates your style very well. It's a sort of your sort of South American influence with some sort of French, obviously I'm going to say your chant influences from like the French styling, and we'll get to that in the next segment. But yeah, wonderful piece in praise of St. Joseph. We are here. This is Sounds from the Sanctuary, and we are here in live in studio with Norberto Guinaldo. Here's another organ piece by this wonderful local Orange County composer. Stay tuned!
You're listening to Sounds from the Sanctuary.
Well, all right. Welcome back to Sounds from the Sanctuary. I am here with Norberto Guinaldo, local composer from Orange County here, and we are in the studio atop the Tower of Hope on the famed campus of Christ Cathedral here in Garden Grove. We are exploring sort of the life of this amazing composer, and we've already learned about his sort of the beginnings, the origin story, where he found music in South America. His mother was a seamstress, and he found music through one of her friends that just taught piano. Then, of course, exploring the local churches and having the inspiration like all of us young musicians had of walking into these churches, being inspired by these beautiful instruments, these architectural wonders that are churches, obviously. And of course, you know, he started to compose. But so I know that after this time, it somehow you found your way to France. I'm not really sure how that happened, but I know that your music, clearly to me as an organist, since I, you know, all organists play the works of Langlais and all these people, but somehow you found your way to France from South America. So how did that come about?
Okay, I'm going to tell you what. When they installed the organist at Garden Grove United Methodist Church, we had a concert series, and among the artists that came to play the organ was Jean Langlais from France. So he came and played a wonderful concert, stayed a couple of days in town, and I had it in my home as a guest for dinner. And also, since I had a pipe organ in my home, I had him play a little bit also. And so during dinner time, we talked about the possibility of my going study with him. That was 1966. Many years went by before I got to do that. But he talked to me about how he taught improvisation. And my interest was improvisation. So this is what I wanted to do. And so it took several years. So until 1973, I was able to go to France and study with him. And so it was a bittersweet time because he had had a heart attack. Right. Around that time, and he was very afraid of dying. And so he was a little bit touchy. I don't know whether it's the French. He reacted very funny sometimes of questions that I posed in regards of that stuff. So it was difficult. I was in awe of him. The lessons were at his home in his little organ.
Wow.
So I learned a lot from him.
Well, and so what does that look like? Because I'm imagining, like, okay, so this composer's at your house, and he sort of asks his famous performer and whatever, and you ask to study with him, and then he says yes. So what, did you go rent an apartment in France? Like, what does your life look like? But you still had a church job here? Like, so...
Well, the problem in France was where to practice.
That's what I've heard. The stories
this,
are
this,
all...
This is where to practice. You know, and see if you don't know anybody, you go there. And so I thought that he would really tell me, well, go to this church and talk to the priest. And no, he was totally hands off, aloof. And he said, look, you go to this music store, and in the back they have a harmonium with pedals.
Wow,
you could practice there. So I did.
That's crazy.
And it was the most depressing thing of my life in there. So I practiced. I had to. It was a rental organ.
Right. Yeah.
And so how can I concentrate on playing a harmonium with two manuals and pedals, you know? And I said to myself, I left Garden Grove with a 48 rank pipe organ and a
camera. Brand
here.
New. Brand new, right? It was just put in. That was the...
Finally, I got to go to a church sometimes. I don't even remember the name of it. And I talked to the organist. And the organist said, listen, I need some substitute. So if you substitute for me on this particular Sunday, I'll let you come and practice. So I did that. And so I finally got to play a real pipe organ in Paris and to practice there. But, no, his teaching was very nice. You know, I was sitting on his organ and he was with a window open and with his back toward me and his feet toward the window and just telling me what to do and how I play, because he didn't need to look at me.
Right,
know?
Yeah, of course. Well, and he was blind, so, you know, that's, again, some of our listeners don't know, there's a long history of blind organists, like, and Langlais is part of this centuries-old tradition.
In certain ways, he was a very patient man and teaching me details. But at other times, he was impatient with his, probably what he thought was my stupid question.
and you're studying improvisation specifically. Like, you didn't bring him
piece. I didn't care about repertoire or anything, although I played some pieces for him at the Schola Cantorum. This is what I was taking also lessons. I was taking a lesson in his home, and I was taking lessons at the Schola Cantorum, where they have a cavier called organ.
And so, I
was there for about 4 months, and then I had to pass an examination. And the examination table was Cochereau.
Oh, wow.
The organ at Notre Dame.
Famed improviser, too.
and a woman called Noélie Pierron.
Oh, wow. Oh, man.
Yeah, you've heard of
that. Yeah.
So that would be so
frightening. I can't imagine playing in front of a panel of those amazing people. Was that improvisation?
I had to play a Langlais piece and a little improvisation. And I leave it like that. They didn't say anything, but I didn't get any first prize.
Well, it's all right. You weren't going to stay in France, so you didn't need that first prize to get a job at one of the great cathedrals. You already had your job locked down, so that's good.
Yeah. It was wonderful to come back. Let me tell you the truth. A lot of people spend months and years sometimes in France studying with great artists, and I was really happy to come home and do what I was doing. and happy to have that little extra knowledge about
music. Well, I was going to say, Clay had an influence on you. I mean, it's clear in your music. Yeah.
I also took a couple of lessons from Jean Guillou.
Oh, really? Saint-Eustache.
I wouldn't say that he was my teacher, but we exchanged ideas of improvisation. And he helped me quite a bit just by talking to me about improvisation.
Well, of course. The man was a genius.
Yeah. Also, we had him at Garden Grove United Methodist Church one time for a concert.
Oh, you actually came here? Wow.
Yeah. And this was about, like, I don't know, 25 or 30 years ago. And he was another wonderful man, you know. He really wild in his music, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember he saying, an improviser always said, where do I go next? Where do I go next? You know? He says, just any place, just do anything. Of course, it isn't totally like that.
Right.
But you have to be creating constantly in your mind.
Well, right. Improvisation is and it's an art in the classical music world that's sort of, I'm not going to say it's died, but it only exists in sort of specific places. Like, okay, jazz is the obvious place it exists. And in the classical world, really a little bit in piano, but mostly organ. Organ has really carried the tradition of classical improvisation through the ages here. And it's something that church musicians do all the time. And in France, that's like all they do. all they do. So, of course, if you're going to study that. And people always think, he's just playing the organ. It's easy. It's like, no. When somebody's improvising, if they really are truly creating something on the spot, not going off of what some other composer wrote or something, that's very difficult. And you have to be in a certain... Yeah. I've talked to a couple of improvisers on this show, like Alan Turciano, another local composer who improvises for dance.
Yeah.
You have to be in a certain mindset where you can't be tied down to something that's there, but you also can't be thinking too far ahead.
Yeah. Improvisation is like learning another instrument.
Yeah.
If you really want to be good, you have to practice it every day, like you practice the organ and the piano from the beginning. It's like, I think that is a learning another instrument. And when I came back, you know, by that time I was married and had 4 children, mm-hmm. you know. I left them here in order to go there. When I came back, I had to pick up where I was, and it was not very difficult. So I didn't have that time to really dedicate that time for improvisation because I had to pay a mortgage. I had to raise, four
kids. Right, you have a life, yeah.
And so I had to do a lot of other stuff besides playing the organ and writing music. And I went into a real estate and I bought property and I fixed a house and I sold them. And I did all this kind of stuff here in the area.
That's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, I did that for a long time. And so I never stop thinking about the improvisation, the performance. The performance of the organ never suffered. I always practice the organ at the church every single day. And at the same time, I was writing at night, whenever I had some time. And that's the way I developed, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the only way to do it. That's when, I tell my students, I'm like, you have to do it every day. It doesn't matter how long you do it, but it's something about developing that relationship with music that it just has to happen every day. It has to be such an intimate part of your life that it's just always there. And that's so important. I think so many young musicians forget about that, that it's, yeah, it really is a back and forth relationship. Well, anyways, let's hear some more music from your wonderful works here. So you wrote a set that was each month of the year, right?
I really don't know what inspired me to do it. I tell you the truth. I was thinking of doing something I probably haven't written for a while, and I said, I have to do something new. And I really don't know how I came with the idea, and but I did. It came. And I said, well, I'm going to write something about the origin of the names of the month. And I started with the first one, and, you know, January came from the god of the heathens, and who knows how long ago.
Right, yeah,
Janus.
Yeah, Janus. He was the god of the door, of the doorway, yeah, like entering the new year, so yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right, there's the one, the guy with the two faces.
Yeah.
That looks back and looks forward.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love Roman mythology. That's my Catholic high school education, studied Latin all the way, yes.
Yeah. So I looked in the web and online and see what I could find something about the origins of the names, you know, but I didn't want to write about goddesses and stuff,
right,
like
Greek
that,
gods, you know? And goddesses, the Roman mythology.
But then I went into poetry and I found out there was a lot of poetry written about the different months of the year.
Yeah, there's a lot about that.
And I started thinking about the weather. Mostly in the East Coast, you know. Like,
I was going to say, the weather out here, please, sunny and 70 degrees all the time. What are you talking about, weather in California?
Yeah, but in the East Coast, like in Buenos Aires, the you have the seasons and the weather changes and so many times, and according to the months where you are, and people have written about what they felt about the weather in certain months, you know, and so I put everything together, the names of the months and the ideas that people had and the feelings they had about the month. So I wrote about it.
Well, and also the themes are in each month, too. Like, there's holidays that happen in each month.
Exactly.
And so you sort of took themes. So we're going to hear two movements from this little suite of pieces, June and July. And June was written for me. So
you put your own play in.
Exactly. I will, yeah. So anyway, so tell us about these 2 months, because they both have themes in them.
Yeah, Juno has this famous English tune from the 13th century. Yes, summer has come.
Right, one of the oldest rounds canons ever written.
Exactly. Summer is coming in,
yep,
it was
mm-hmm.
called. I think it turned out a pretty darn good piece.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Although some people think that the ending should have been in a different way.
No, don't name any names here. No names.
No, I'm not mentioning any name. So this piece was dedicated here to my host today in the radio station, and I think he played it for me a couple of times, and one time is in the Methodist Church in San Diego. Wonderful performance, I should say. And that piece, Juno, is dedicated to him.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
So July, since we have the 4th of July, I decided to just use the subject instead of going into, you know, something far-fetched name from 5,000 years ago.
Right, yeah, nobody knows.
So I use the tune America.
America, right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a fanfare of some kind. It's a, I don't even remember the second title I gave to the piece. some kind of a flourish.
Sure, oh, yeah.
You know, so if you want to play it, I mean, go right ahead. I recorded it at Garden Grove, so it's a nice piece.
Excellent. So two of the summer months from this whole set of music for the whole year. One piece for each month. They're beautiful pieces. You can find it all on his website, which is
GuinaldoPublications.com.
Excellent. So June and July from the suite of pieces. We're here in the studio with Norberto Guinaldo. I hope you enjoy these two pieces from the summer months, June and July.
Be sure to tell a friend about Sounds from the Sanctuary coming to you from the campus of Christ Cathedral in Southern California.
we've just heard two of the most exciting works of Norberto Guinaldo from his set of pieces that goes through the whole year, one piece for each season. They're beautiful works. One of them was even dedicated to me that I've been happy to play here. Norberto Guinaldo is a local composer. We've heard his story. He's been all over the world, but how did you end up in Garden Grove? You were born in South America. You grew up in South America. You did some studying in France, but you made your home here, really, in Garden Grove. You live in Garden Grove?
And I live in Fullerton.
Oh, okay, yeah, so Orange County.
Yeah.
And you've been here for a long time.
Yes, I've been here since 1959. I came to the United States because of the organ, really. I have met this American fellow in an organ concert at the Colegio Nacional de Buenos Aires, where my teacher was the organist. It was a high school built in the 1800s with an auditorium that is fantastic architectural beauty. And it had a German organ, three manual organ. Can you imagine?
In the high school?
In the high school. But it was downtown Buenos Aires, about two, three blocks from the Pink House, you know, the government house there. So I met this guy. We started talking. I told him, I said, I would like to go to the United States sometimes, you know. But 2 years before, some cousins of my mother have come to the United States and resided in Arizona. So between the help of my relatives and this fellow that lived in California, actually, lived in here in Orange County, I came with my wife and we made residence here. I had to get any work I wanted. I had no reference, no nothing. I came legally, and I had a passport. We came by airplane, 2 days trip in those days with the propellers airplane.
Wow.
1959, and ended up in Florida. It took a Greyhound to Mesa, Arizona, where I met these cousins. Finding work was very difficult, was very tough.
Well, I mean, the journey itself to me sounds like exhausting.
July, and we arrived on Florida on the 4th of July, 1959. Aww. And we took a Greyhound all the way to Arizona. When we got to Arizona, I said, this gotta be hell. Because the temperature, I never seen anything like that, like, and I don't know, like 120 degrees or
right,
something.
Right, even in like spring and in the winter, it's hot there. Oh.
But this was July.
Oh. Dry heat.
when going in the car to their home, the air was coming into the, you know, from the open windows. The car didn't have air conditioning, and it was like fire coming through.
Oh.
It was something that I had never experienced in Buenos Aires. You know, although Buenos Aires summer heat is humid, but it's tolerable. Anyway, it took a while to really get started, but then I got a job in a little church in Norwalk. I was there for 4 years. Then I wanted a pipe organ, and I heard that there was an opening on a pipe organ in South Pasadena in a church called Oneonta Presbyterian Church, and it had a three-manual organ. The organist there was a professor of organ and religion at Chapman College.
Oh, okay, right Orange around County. Here, yeah.
His name was Ron Huntington. Very nice man, very good organist. So I took that job for a whole year for the reason of just playing a pipe organ and a higher salary, of course. And so I practiced there 7 days a week, 7 days a week for a whole year. In the meantime, I started taking lessons from Clarence Mader.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And Clarence Mader, I have told him, I said, Mr. Mader, I'm here in this church for about 1 year. I need a job and a place in a church sometime. Well, he told me that he had been hired as a consultant for a new church that was going to be built in Garden Grove.
Mm.
And an organ that was going to be put in there. By that time, I have written a piece of music called Toccata and Fugue that was published by J. Fisher and Company. Clarence Mader got a hold of the piece. When he looked at it, he probably thought I was big stop composer, but which I wasn't. And, you know, I wrote that piece and I won a prize and it was published.
Yeah.
So, you know, he said, okay, I'm going to recommend your name to this church. The organ wasn't yet installed. The church was being built. And it was a three-manual organ, and I saw the specification. I said, this is wonderful. So he told the people at Garden Grove, said, you better get this person before he goes away.
Aw, what a sweet thing to do. Like, that's wonderful.
During that time, I was taking organs from Mater. I was taking, before that, I was taking organ lessons from a fellow that was the organist at the first Christian church in Beverly Hills called Ron Huntington. And in that church, it was a four-manual organ, Aeolian Skinner, that it became the organist at the Arboretum.
Yeah, right here, downstairs.
Right here in
yeah, I remember when I first played something for you, when I knew that you were in Garden Grove and I had you come over, you were like, oh, I know this organ very well. And I was like, what? From where? And like, from a long time ago in a different place entirely. It's funny how worlds collide.
And I did a recording for a radio station, and it was a project from the Los Angeles AGO, American Guild of Organists, Los Angeles chapter. And I recorded the Prelude and Fugue in B minor there, and I recorded some Schumann and something else. I don't remember. That was so long ago.
I was going to say, we'll have to ask, who's Thompson Howell's in charge of the LA AGO podcast. We'll have to have him dig up those recordings someday.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're in the archive somewhere.
You know who has the recordings? The fellow who produces Pipe Dreams.
Oh, Michael Barone.
Michael Barone.
Shout out to Michael Barone, the other organ radio show out there.
Yeah, I think those recordings ended up in his hands.
Well, see, shout out to Michael Barone. Listeners, you should check out Pipe Dreams. That's an amazing show. It's one of the longest running radio programs, and it is about the pipe organ.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, well, thank you for joining us here today on Sounds from the Sanctuary, Noberto.
My pleasure.
It's been wonderful. Again, you're a local composer, and I think I love new music. I love talking to composers. I love talking to my fellow colleagues in the organ world. But again, you're really special to me because you're still writing, and you're writing organ music, and it's church music. It's beautiful, and it's inspired a lot by Christian themes, too, which is amazing.
Yes, and I'm glad that we did this, and I'm glad because I heard you play, and I think that you are a wonderful organist, and you're going to have a great future. And I know that maybe years after I'm gone, you could be playing some of my music.
Oh, well, speaking of that, the last piece we're going to hear today is a piece that is actually, I'd say, in this Christ Cathedral repertoire. I play it every single year, literally every year. So you wrote a set of pieces. I forgot what the whole set's called, but one of them is called Lauda Zion Salvatorum. And it's a little short piece that's based on the chant tune that's the sequence for Corpus Christi called Lauda Zion, Laud, O Zion, our salvation, laud with hymns of exaltation, Christ our King and Shepherd true. This is one of the most ancient tunes of the church.
Wow, you know the words of this.
Well, of course. Song. Yeah, well, because again, this being the Catholic Church now, we sing that tune every year. We have our congregation sings this one of the most ancient tunes of the church, the sequence for Corpus Christi, and you wrote this beautiful piece on it. So if you come to Mass at Christ Cathedral on Corpus Christi, you will always hear
wonderful
Roberto Gualnaldo's Lauda Zion. So
thank
we're going to close with
much.
That. Anything else you want to say?
Or? No, I appreciate this discussing these things with you. I think it's been a lot of fun.
Exactly.
And remembering things that sometimes I didn't want to remember, but they were fun.
Well, that's life, right? C'est la vie. Anyways, tell us one more time. Again, if you enjoyed any of the music you heard, you can find it online at this man's website.
GuinaldoPublications.com.
Check it out, and we will have all of that information on our website. If you Google Sounds from the Sanctuary, you will find us, you will find Roberto's music, and you can hear it live on campus every Corpus Christi. This is David Ball, your host, Christ Cathedral organist, and acting head of music ministry, signing off from the radio studios atop the Tower of Hope here on the historic Garden Grove campus of Christ Cathedral. Enjoy and get out there, listen to live music as we're coming back out of this COVID pandemic. That's important. Support all your local musicians. And one more piece by Norberto, Lauda Zion.
Thanks for listening to Sounds from the Sanctuary, coming to you from the campus of Christ Cathedral in Southern California.